Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I'm still here. You still there? Yeah, I thought so. No non-leaking roof for me. No exotic sports cars. No walk-in humidors full of the finest Cuban tobacco from him. Nope, sorry. No, none of that was left behind for us. Now, all kidding aside, though, I think we're going to have a fairly serious conversation this evening about all this rapture and tribulation business. I'm Bob, and this is The Horn, and it's the beginning of the week, which means that it's Moran Monday. God, it's like they've been queuing up all weekend. Really. Several nominees out there, and I think we'll find a way to get to them all. A couple of programming reminders for you, if you will. Hey, look. Chat room filling up nicely. If you've never been to the Head On Radio Network chat room, this would be a lovely time to give it a try. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and there's a separate tab all of its own for the chat room. It's free. The conversation flowing amongst yourselves, and me too. I mean, I'm in there as well at any time during the show. But no, a couple of reminders. One, let's see. Well, okay, the obvious. We need about 15 members of the Thrifty 250 this evening. 15 folks at $10 apiece, and we will take care of that aspect of the program in short order. We pulled up short on Friday, but you know these things happen. So that means we've got to catch up with what we didn't do Friday. So that means 9 and 6 is 15, right? Right. So there's that. Second piece of business. Just a reminder that the month of June is going to be a very, very, very busy month. Because, among other things, I'm going to be gone around the first part of the month. Or around the end of the first week of the month, off to D.C. for a little bit of demonstrating or not. Well, anyway, we'll be having an event in front of the Environmental Protection Agency, thanking them for being the only people in the government who seem to be remotely interested in Appalachians continuing to have anything resembling a future. Somebody's got to stand up for them while they're under a continuous assault from the thugs in the coal industry. And that'll be us. And then toward the end of June, I will be working with Dr. Well, wait, no. Okay, so there's the, that's the 7th and the 8th. And then along about the 13th or 14th, we're going to pack up everything and head for Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Netroots Nation. I'm proud to announce that there will be a screening on the Friday of Netroots Nation. There will be a screening of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s magnificent movie, The Last Mountain. Now, this was also screened aboard the MS Eurodam during the Progressive Voices cruise. And it was absolutely, well, there were a lot of people who were not familiar with what the Appalachian apocalypse entails. And that's what mountaintop removal is. It's an Appalachian apocalypse. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s new film shines a bright light on it so that the dark forces who are destroying and making this beautiful land toxic, well, they can't hide in the darkness anymore. So that's going to take place the Friday of Netroots Nation, and it will be. And so, among other things, we will be tabling on behalf of Coal River Mountain Watch and encouraging folks to come to the screening. Okay, so that's another week gone. Then toward the end of June, actually it's around the 27th, 28th, toward the end of June, I will be working with Dr. Bill at his Summer Academy for PRISM West Virginia. Many of you have tuned in to the history chats. Many of you watched the history sessions of the Academy last year. And you have an idea of what a magnificent, magnificent opportunity and this is, what a grand learning experience this is. And it will be even better this year. It's going to be going on for 3 weeks. So beginning about the 27th of June and into the first 2 weeks of July, not much in the way of a show, except for the fact that there will be live video content, but it'll be during the day instead of in this slot at night. So by way of a reminder, June is going to be a very, very busy month, and I will be away from the microphone a whole bunch. Now, lest any of you think that this is some sort of pleasure excursion, let me disabuse you of that in a straight-up hurry. All of this is work. Vacations are nice when you can get them. But these aren't those. These aren't that. This is not a vacation. This is very, very serious, serious work. So don't, you know, if I'm not on the air every night, oh, I guess Bob just doesn't. No. Mm-mm. No. These are the things that we do to try to fulfill the mission of the Horn. And I hope you will therefore be patient. I can't talk about being an advocate, I can't talk about being an activist, unless I myself am willing to go forth and do it myself. You know, there's that old Bible verse out there that says, "Be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only." Right? That's a call to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. So there's that little reminder. And that also means that because I won't be constant, I hate the fact that I'm on the air going, you know, contribute, 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 contribute. No one hates doing it more than I do. But under the circumstances, I have a feeling contributions will fall off to near nothing in June, which is a scary thing to contemplate when one is paying the bills to keep all, when, you know, in light of the bills that one has to pay to keep all of this going. So anyway, it is Moran Monday. And I just want to point out something. Speaking of Minneapolis, a tornado touched down there yesterday. A tornado touched down in, I guess, the northern part of Minneapolis. And it just so happens that a big area that was hit by that tornado just happens to be represented by Michelle Bachmann. Now, as you well know, Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin routinely vie for most hateful woman on the planet status. And they're pretty neck and neck the entire time, I think you'd have to say. Wouldn't you agree? But a question arises out of that. When do we get to say that a tornado struck northern Minneapolis in Michelle Bachmann's district because God is angry with her for being such an intolerant, bigoted, homophobic, xenophobic creature. I had to run over all the... No, no, I can't call her that. Can't refer to it. No, 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 not that either. No. Creature. When do we get to say that? Oh, right. We're not going to say that because, well, it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, does it? Unless it does. Unless there really is some invisible cloud being up there. Some giant, white-bearded, juvenile delinquent who enjoys torturing his creation. Who maybe actually has a sense of morality and decency, oddly manifested. And occasionally wiggles his little finger at certain areas for doing certain things, displie ver. But even then, it doesn't make sense, does it? Nor does it make sense what happened to Joplin, Missouri. I'm sorry, Missouri. Missouri. Misery. No, that doesn't make any sense either. Unless, one wants to look for a real-world, actual cause-and-effect kind of explanation. Have you seen the photos of the after-effects of these tornadoes? Looks like a bomb went off. A really big bomb. I mean, it looks... These places look like Hiroshima. Even as hell was about to yawn wide open under or over Joplin, Missouri, I just happened to see a documentary on, I think, the Discovery Channel about what happened in Tuscaloosa. Tuscaloosa, Alabama, the home of the University of Alabama, the University of Alabama, I might add. And again, it looked like a nuclear holocaust. Just vast square miles of nothing left standing. Just as Joplin, Missouri looks like. Just as Fultonville, Alabama looks like. Phil Campbell, Alabama looks like, just as Hackleburg, Alabama looks like. And the first I, as a liberal, would think of, and immediately banish from my mind, is that maybe these fundies have it all backwards. Maybe that's their world, all the bigotry, the racism, the gender... Maybe that core teaching of every major religion, namely... Try to be a little nicer to each other. Love your neighbor as yourself. Loving your enemy is the highest form of love. Socrates came up with it. Go and read the Sum. You'll see what I mean. But no, you really can't establish any sort of rational cause and effect link between all of those. You just can't. On the other hand, I, however, was once upon a time in a long ago, the Star Wars theme. No, a long time ago, I was a student at the University of Alabama. And I lived in a crowded park that was cold as ice in winter and hotter than hell in summer. The construction quality of that apartment was something ill. And it may well be one of those places that got flattened during the recent storm. I need to start thinking about things like natural disasters. I thought about the earthquakes that have struck places like Mexico City, Istanbul, Haiti. where all the human structures crumbled as if they had been built upon shifting sands. Those are earthquakes. Then I thought about when earthquakes strike in places where they have put real effort into earthquake-proofing their builds, where giant skyscrapers continue to stand even though they weave a little bit. And they pour real money into making sure that the buildings are safe, even on the odd chance that this won't happen twice in 100 years. Once is enough. You see, apartments and apartment complexes and condominia, they go up in places like Tuscaloosa, Alabama, as quickly as the contractor can get them up and at the lowest amount of money, and building codes be damned. And then when an F5 tornado comes along, in a time when the planet is in crisis from the elevated heat generated by global climate catastrophe, and those cracker box buildings wind up looking like they were built of matchsticks, people say, well, what happened? And my only answer is, hey, conservatism happened. The profit motive happened. The desire to get the most for the least, happened. Now, you can't say with 100 that it's 100% that way. I mean, if the F5 lands right on top of your marble castle, I mean, how would, really, how would the Taj Mahal fare in an F5 tornado? It's a very old building, probably not well. But there are things, even in these tornado zones, there were things that were left standing from a long ago in which things were built far more solidly than they are built now. They are built now with, I mean, look at Alabama and Missouri. You know, they both have those ugly right-wing streaks to them. They're built as cheaply as possible. They are built with the cheapest labor possible, namely not union labor. Cheap materials, cheap labor, cut corners, and it's a recipe for disaster when nature does what nature does best, and that is upset the apple cart. So that's worth thinking about the next time one of these horrors comes blowing through some city, some town. That's capitalism on the ground. Those piles of debris, that's capitalist debris. That's profit-driven wreckage. It's what's born of building too many houses on too little ground. It's at least, I think, worth thinking about. And, of course, everybody now realizes, yeah, there's, like I said, no, I didn't get anything that was on my rapture wish list. I got a note from Brandon saying, sadly, he is not the king of New York. No, didn't work out. Not that we expected it to. But what's surprising is that there are a lot of people who did, who emptied their life savings into buying those stupid, inexpressibly stupid billboards. People who, before they were fleeced out of their money in order to buy billboards, had enough money to, let's tick off the list, clothe the naked, house the homeless, heal the sick, visit those in prison. You know, the things that Yeshua commanded that his followers actually do, so that it might be said that they had also done it unto him. Because there's nothing in there that says, yea, verily, go forth and buy a bunch of billboards. It just doesn't. It doesn't say, those who advertise in my name shall stand at my right hand in glory. Sorry. So the sheep were fleeced. In a bunch of talk about a rapture that is not even biblically correct, if you want to talk about biblical correctness. It is the out-of-whole-cloth invention of a Christian huckster of the 19th century. But there's a ton of money to be made in it. Obviously. I saw one estimate that Pastor Whackbottom of the Radio Evangelical Church, the guy who created this rapture hustle, that the man at the tender age of 89 years old may well be worth $120 million. That's $120 million. It's not feeding the hungry. It's $120 million that is not clothing the naked. That's $120 million that is not housing the homeless. No. And he's been kind of hard to catch up with today, really. Apparently, if no one else did, what was Harold Camping's Harold Egbert Camping's remark? Well, I'm just flabbergasted it didn't happen. Yeah, $120 million worth of flabbergast. Maybe that's a new definition for the word flabbergast. Flabbergast as a noun. Maybe it's flabbergassed. Well, I'm just flabbergasted. Them checks clear yet? But you see, one of the problems that attends these fundamentalists, these denizens of darkness and ignorance, One of the handmaidens that attends them is the fact that they don't understand a damned thing about that which they pretend or presume to worship. For me, though I will not draw any bright lines, is more than a little bit of irony that these tornadoes struck when they did, both a month before and the day after this prediction of the rapture of the saints. Of irony. If I was a God-believing feller, which I'm not, I might guess that was, it was just a little lesson drawn out there on the great celestial whiteboard. First, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent draws a picture of a city, and he names it Joplin. And then he takes his dry erase eraser and just erases it. And suddenly an F5 tornado lands on Joplin, Missouri. And everybody says, why? Why us? But it does say there in their book, "Behold, I come in the night." What does that mean? What does that mean? That means you never know when you're going to get burgled. That presumes that, remember, this is something that was said before the invention of electric light. Most of the wealthy could lights that burned all night long. It comes in a time of darkness. Comes in a time of vulnerability. Because one of the things that kept human beings in the game was discovery of fire, by which they could equalize so that they would not be preyed upon by the animals who could see in the night where we could not. But won't. It is a time of great vulnerability. And I've been trying to work through this in my own mind. Perhaps these fundamentalist fools don't understand that the rapture of the universe ends every day, every second of every day, somewhere on this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. The universe ends for every person who breathes his or her last. The universe ended before it could really even be perceived recently. A 10-month-old baby who had what can only be described as a very, very rare heart condition. The baby could have been saved with a heart transplant, quite likely. But instead, the universe ended for the baby because the baby's parents' profit declined to pay for it. The insurance company said what insurance companies say best. We don't pay. I only heard this in passing during a newscast today that was all virtually taped with stories of the tornado in Joplin and the one that touched down in Minnesota. And, of course, the stirring speech, it was a fine speech, given by President Obama in Dublin. I had not heard cheering at that level since the last time I watched a replay of the Ed Sullivan Show where the Beatles made their first appearance. I think it's safe to say that in certain international circles, our president has now achieved Beatles/Elvis status. Him saying, "Yes, we can," in Gaelic was almost as this, I think, and certainly designed to be reminiscent of John Kennedy saying, "Ich bin ein Berliner." Or perhaps the Beatles singing, "Komm, gib mir deine Hand." Our president is now an international rock star. And so there was very little mention of this story, and I went to find it, but I couldn't. There were some time pressures involved. So I didn't find the full text, but I gathered enough of it as I sat and watched. A 10-month-old baby. A rare condition that could have been saved by a transplant. I think it was a heart. It might have been a liver. Not sure. And a profit-driven insurance company that said we don't pay because it's an experimental procedure. And we don't pay for no experimental procedures. Would they have paid for such a procedure, say, for the CEO of their company? Without a doubt, because then it wouldn't have been experimental. It would have been vitally important to shareholders. Somewhere out there this evening, there is an individual who is wholly and completely responsible for denying coverage, for denying life itself to that 10-month-old child, photos of whom I saw. And you know, much as the Bible says, lo, I will come like a thief in the night, it also says, suffer the little children to come unto me. And woe be to that man who would prevent it. It would be better that he had never been born. It would be better that that insurance adjuster who denied life to this child had never been born. You know that, and I know that. But somewhere tonight, at this hour more than likely, that insurance adjuster is sitting down to his or her evening meal, perhaps nestled in the bosom of his or her family, and feels not even so much as a twinge of remorse, doubt, or regret, let alone actual ethical, moral culpability for the death of a 10-month-old. Because after all, denying that procedure may very well wind up in a rather tasty Christmas year-end bonus. If you've ever received an email from me, you know that my signature line is a quote from Kurt Vonnegut, from his novel, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. And it says, and this is what it says, a normal person, functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society, can hardly hear his conscience at all. And so, tonight, somewhere in America, that insurance executive, driven by profit, who took it upon him or herself to end the universe for a 10-month-old baby, will say things like, pass the peas, or should we get pizza tonight? To the family.